Thank you.
We're ready?
We're on.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'd like to call this Inter County School Board discussion meeting to order, please. We are voice recorded. Today we are doing sort of part two. We've already had one session on for the board on continuous improvement, and today we're going to be working on another vital element, which is the superintendent evaluation tools and the 2013-14 board member goals. There are two things we need to do before we actually get into the meat of this, and the first thing is we need to talk a little bit about the time frame. We had set 1 to 5. Can we talk about that a little bit? Number one, once we make this commitment, we need to make it as a group and not have just people parceled off, because I think we need to all be together to have this discussion, all of us. So if you want to commit to 1 to 4, you want to even commit to 1 to 3:30, we just need to have a discussion on that. Not 1 to 1:30.
I can be focused from 1 to 1:15. After that, my ADD may kick in.
I gave you the benefit of the doubt to 1:30.
I guess if we're going to have that conversation, maybe we should talk about what it is we expect to get accomplished, because the evaluation tool and the board goals are a lot. Mm-hmm. And if we are not going to work on that specifically to get to talk about that, you know, we need to know what our goal is, because if our goal is to talk about the tool and the goals, 1 to 5 is not even going to be enough time. So if we're thinking of shortening it, I'd like to understand what we're trying to accomplish today.
Well, for me, when we had the conversation last Tuesday, it sort of changed this workflow of things. Mm-hmm. Originally, when we scheduled today to do strategic plan and superintendent goals, we didn't have all this background information mm-hmm. before us. After hearing that Dr. Adams' meeting with staff mm-hmm. and a separate goal-seeking mm-hmm. session, I feel like we can only go so far, and then we're going to have to wait until after Dr. Adams has that meeting, and then we can come back together. I think we can do our framework. I think we can talk about how the superintendent evaluation is going to look. But at some point, we're going to need to actually have established the goals before we can plug in all the objectives mm-hmm. for the superintendent. So I think we can do the framework today. I think we can talk about goals that we would like to have. But I think the final determination of those goals and doing the superintendent's in the alignment with the superintendent objectives, we'll have to wait until after the next meeting. So I think it'll be a shorter meeting today.
What would be your kind of time frame you're talking about?
3 or 3:30. Okay. 3:30. Yeah.
Well, usually our meetings go 1 to 3. Mm-hmm. So if we want to put 3:30 as the latest for that, then that would work.
Okay.
That
would
work.
Can you do it?
I've got the date locked off, so okay. My wife's got the bundles of joy, so I don't have to get them. So,
So today we are going to talk about board goals.
I think so.
Okay.
Okay. Well, why don't we say we're going to go to 3:30 then? That's okay. And Dr. Adams has an issue that I would like to applaud her for wanting to bring before the group. This is not something that needs a vote. She just wanted to give us some information and to see if there was any concerns. When she brought it up to me, I applaud you for bringing this to us, because you do not need to. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Accountability. I appreciate it.
Actually, it has to do with the executive roundtable. The leaders within the community have been working hard to try to organize themselves for the last year, actually, to become a vehicle by which agencies that serve the community in a variety of ways, for us our specific interest is children, but in a variety of ways to bring their activities activities and
programs
to the table so that we can eliminate, so there's more, a greater effort of eliminating overlap within the community, the agencies within the community. Actually, Mrs. Jimenez sits at the meetings now as well as Connected for Kids, because that agency as well is working on behalf of agencies for children to try and not have as much overlap so we can get the most out of, you know, the dollars we have. I don't know. I don't even know how many agencies are
for
children,
are
actually. Probably 12, 15 would be my guess. The sheriff, the North County,
the college.
I mean, it's a United Way, Community Foundation. It's a broad, you know, broad-based group. So what they've been trying to do, and they've written some bylaws, and they have a slate of officers in which they're trying to move this forward. One of the things that they need is somebody that can help facilitate that. You know, actually, Leslie Spurlock has been kind of doing it on her own, to call the meetings, have the minutes, and do that. There is no funding to necessarily do that. So last year we were asked as members of this board to sign a commitment letter to give up our time and any available resources that we thought we might have. So people have given up their time, but we really haven't had any resources come forward from the various groups. If this is going to coalesce and have meaning, we've got to have somebody that can help the group.
Maybe a shepherd of some kind.
Yeah. So the sheriff has actually offered to put some dollars on the table. He receives dollars from all I can.
Don't say he gets drug money.
It's the forfeiture.
It is. And 10% of that is dedicated to causes within the community. And so he has offered to put dollars on the table. We feel like we need about $40,000 to $45,000 to bring somebody on, even part time, to be able to move forward on this. And so what I'm asking the board is to consider $10,000 to $15,000 from the school district, 1 year at a time. In other words, I think what I said the other day is we've got to come together or not, because we've been working at trying to come together, but we need some dollars on the table to try and hire somebody to schedule things, to help coordinate some activities. So I'm asking the board, I would like to put $10,000 to $15,000 on for the table. The sheriff is offering to put $30,000 on the table this year. Everybody was going back to sign their letter of commitment and come to the table next time with what they thought they might be able to provide for this year. I would only do it 1 year at a time, as I mentioned, because we've got to prove to ourselves that this is something. It would be very worthwhile. It would be exciting if we could get this going. But Mrs. Jimenez, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think that pretty much sums it up. And I think one of the things that's exciting about this is that even though each county is different, in St. Lucie County, their roundtable has had a lot of success. And, of course, we're different. We have different needs.
Right.
And this group has been really working hard to coalesce around what can be done in our community to reduce duplication of services. So everyone's and I think one thing to keep in mind is that there are a lot of nonprofits that are at the table, and they're willing to do in kind. For example, if there's a training that's needed or things that they can offer, but in their role as nonprofits, they can't.
They can't have dollars to put on the table.
A lot of them are just not in a position to do so.
3Cs aren't allowed to donate money to other 3Cs, are they?
I think their funding is restricted.
There's some restrictions on what nonprofits can donate to other nonprofits.
There are some, restrictions, but I know Character Counts did.
Yeah.
And we did a lot of things, of course, that cost the school nothing, you know, as far as materials.
Exactly.
We did a huge amount of things for them. We never did hard dollars. But we provided speakers.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things they have agreed to, that this year the focus will be on children. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's the other thing, is their focus is what it they determine that their first focus is going to be on the children. So we benefit greatly from
How would the school district benefit from it, though? A real hard, tangible.
A hard, tangible.
I mean, I have a hard time dealing with, you know.
I wish I knew all of the age and not-for-profit agencies that are within the community. If we just look at children and children, I would say that Connected for Kids probably works with 10 to 20 agencies within the community. And what they're trying to do is, every agency is like a silo out there. Mm-hmm. You know, they have their own goals, they have their own things that they're trying to do. And so what this group is trying to do is, along with Connected for Kids, is to find out what those goals are and try and have some common goals so that they can offer their parent academies mm-hmm. and other agencies will know about it and not try and offer
to eliminate duplication
right.
of services.
It's really, yes.
And better use of resources.
They all get funded separately.
Yeah. One example could be, you know, for example, there are issues around juvenile justice and services for children. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, if that were an issue that the round table would tackle, you have the sheriff's office at the table, and they would be working on the civil citations piece. You'd have Boys and Girls Clubs and youth guidance who are for mentoring that can focus on making sure that there are adequate trained mentors to work with those kids that are at risk. So instead of the school district always having to be the one that has to solve the problem that impact children in our community, we feed them. You know, we take care of all these issues. If there is an issue around children that everybody at the table can do their part through their agency with, then it doesn't fall only to the school district to address that issue. And that would just be an example. I'm not saying that that's the example they would use, but even if it were parenting, if they were going to say, okay, the school district gets Title I dollars to do parenting, a lot of the there are a lot of organizations that have to have parenting for their kids' parents. Youth guidance may do something for their parents when they come in and do the intakes, substance away, all those people. So instead of everybody working independently on trying to do parent academies, parent this, if together they could say, okay, these are the things we want to accomplish. What is your agency going to do? What is yours? What is yours? That is not duplicating, because then what happens is I want funding for my parent academies. You want funding for your character count parent workshop. You want funding for your nonprofit, and everybody's pulling funding instead of saying, you know what, let's let CASEL focus on that and we'll work with them because they're the parenting experts or something like
but
that.
But it comes up through, and then this group makes the final decision
right.
of where
right.
the funding goes. Okay, so you've got these common issues, but then it funnels up through to the executive group, and they make the decisions. It's going to funnel the agencies here. I think Connected for Kids is kind of a middle group here that that works it through, comes up to the top, and then decisions are made about.
And you cannot expect someone to volunteer their time to take the. And again, I commend you for bringing this to the table. You did not have to.
Right.
So I really think that's important, and I appreciate that that's how you operate. But I think when we think about the anything that any of us has ever been involved in, when you have only a volunteer who is doing minutes or who's you are dooming yourself with the magnitude of what we're looking at and with the kind of accountability you're going to need for getting these groups together. You need to have somebody who is a central
coordinator.
Yes, who can do that, who can get information out.
Communicate.
And more importantly, who can get information out and communicate it to the people who need it as those little ripple effects take place from the center on out.
I think it is very worthwhile to give this the best opportunity that we can to succeed mm-hmm. because it will benefit, you know, the children in our community. If we're not, everybody isn't trying to do their own thing, and we can not duplicate services.
And again, you're using the best use of resources, because that's one of the biggest complaints of nonprofits is you have four different people doing drug education. That's the last thing I heard was there's four different nonprofit entities that are involved in mm-hmm. drug education or drug awareness, whatever you want to call it now. Is that the best use of dollars for each of those agencies? I don't know. You know, that's for the group, and you know, that's for those who are involved in it to decide is the best use. And that certainly, if this group is together and they're meeting, and you said that so far you have been very pleased with what you've heard come out of this group.
This group wants this to work. It's just that it's kind of at loose ends. We need somebody to coordinate it. Right. Everybody at the table is a CEO of their, you know, organization, so trying to, you know.
But I understand Mr. McCain is looking for results, but I don't think you can have results until you have...
It's still in the form of this.
Yeah.
Oh, and I understand. I'm not... Question, I always have a hard time visualizing
conceptually,
things.
Yeah.
I mean, this, I'm telling you, the last time we met, and this is very hard, this is all very hard for me.
Yeah.
It always adds, probably the reason I'm the bean counter, you know, because I want to know, and that's all
matters.
Because you have definite outcomes
yeah.
So if
I
want to
know if the number's 5.35, I don't want to hear around 5.
Well, why don't we have that discussion? Does anybody have any other comments? And more importantly, is I think Dr. Adams is looking. If she cannot go to this without the support of the board being behind it, because then if there's one person, as she said, she wants to know if anyone objects to this.
And we are fortunate that we have Mrs. Jimenez there too. So the board, your board, is represented by myself.
I mean, it is. It sounds like it's being funded by the sheriff's office and us.
Well, at this point, really, nobody else has. I haven't said anything to them about putting any money on the table. The last meeting that we just had the other day was, here's your commitment letter. Our next meeting, you bring your letter and you bring what you're able to.
And also, United Way may also. Mr. Kent is out of commission for a little bit, but I think they're also thinking of putting in some dollars. So you may be willing and have support from the board to put in a certain amount, but it may be less on all the other commitment letters look like.
Exactly.
And then the one thing I would say to the bean counter thing is that I think that this is one of the issues that we face in education, where we think of education as a business. But education is not like a business. It's a social service in our community. So the bean counter part of you is the business side of you, and it's black and white, and you do this, these are the rules, this is the outcome. But when you're working with human beings, there's a lot of complexity. And I think that's where we have that constant struggle, even at the national level, the state level, when we talk about education and accountability, and everybody wants to run schools like they're businesses, and children aren't widgets. You don't just sit them in the classroom and say, here's the curriculum, process it, and at the end you're going to get this grade. They have a diversity of abilities, a diversity of issues that impact them, and that's what we have to deal with. And I think that's what we lose sight of, because there are businesses that can function very well ignoring the human side of things. They just make a product, you know, a pen. And kids aren't like that. And I think that's like an ongoing thing. But I think that's why these things are difficult, because in order to affect change, you need to bring the players together, you need to have a plan, and you need to execute, and this group needs coordination. So I really... I would support it, because working with Connected for Kids and seeing what the challenges are amongst the agencies to avoid that duplication of services, it's tremendous. And if our leaders in the community, because these are the CEOs, these are the decision makers, they can help to bring that, help it coalesce. And in the end, it will benefit children, because those children will be better prepared to learn, and the school district will not have to do all these things alone. So for that reason, I'm willing to support it. It's 1 year at a time. If it doesn't work, when the superintendent comes up, you know, back the following year and says yes or no, and by then she'll have an idea.
Oh, yeah.
She'll say, you know, we tried, but this isn't really what we expected. No more funds. Or it's working. Let's continue. So I'm willing to give it a try, because I think our kids deserve it.
Ms. Davey.
I don't know that I have anything to add to the conversation. I'm not really familiar with the group, and I don't want to say anything negative, because it might be just fabulous, but I just don't know anything about the group. I do know back when you and I served on United Way Citizens Review Committee together, which was a long time ago. We were statewide making a very concerted effort not to duplicate services, but this is one of those cyclical things that, you know, you sort it all out and there isn't duplication, and then little by little programs are added on and grants are given and things start to overlap again, and that it takes a very deliberate effort from the community to stop the duplication. And this is, you know, sounds like a different technique of how to stop the duplication than what we did the last time, but more important than the lack of duplication, I think, is probably the coordination of services so that there isn't a gap. You know, there isn't a piece missing when these kids need something. These youth, if one piece of that puzzle isn't addressed, oftentimes they don't find success. So for me, the duplication isn't as big an issue as making sure that all the services that are necessary are available and provided.
And only because I'm working with a nonprofit that is just getting started, and I've been helping their group with some bylaws and some other things as a new nonprofit. They actually are forming because of some services that have been dropped through another nationwide entity, but some services here that have been dropped completely and they're no longer available in this community. So they're looking at starting a small group that will be able to, and they're not children's services, but they are, you know, looking to set up a board of directors and those kinds of things. So I've been working with that. And there's another example of why you need somebody you can help coordinate, because you don't know if services have been dropped. No, and when you drop the ball and one component, as everybody has said, one component for a child can make the difference as to whether or not they're successful, committed, or, you know, or have those opportunities. So, again, thank you for bringing this to us. And even though Ms. Disney's, as she said, she's not familiar with the organization, but certainly isn't registering any kind of reluctance to it.
They're trying to model it after the St. Lucie, and actually the person who coordinates theirs, which is full-time, Christine Epps, has been to this council, you know, this group, this roundtable group, a few times to, you know, bring information to the table and ideas for actually more projects than, you know, the organization. But I think it's a very worthwhile endeavor. It just needs to be... need to move on and see if it's going to work, mm-hmm. and see if we can pull ourselves together as a community, mm-hmm. that can serve.
And the figures you gave, I appreciated the fact that you said some parameters, mm-hmm. for yourself that you're setting up within your own budget and your own ability to do that without us. But I think the fact that you're able to be willing to talk to those who come back, who may, you know, even a commitment of a few thousand dollars from others will help offset some
absolutely.
Of those needs, and, you know, just the day-to-day needs, mm-hmm. of making an organization such as this be successful. So.
And Mrs. Jimenez and I will work to keep you up to date on how it's coming, because I know she attends, mm-hmm. you know, the meetings, you know, as well, so we will keep you advised of how it's going.
And nobody's fussing because we have two school people, do they? Anybody fussed about that one?
Well, I guess because I'm connected for kids, and then I also serve on one of the Okeechobee Interagency Alliance. They work with the foster program and with DCF. So I'm one of their representatives. So I go to those meetings to report on my attendance at those meetings. Mm-hmm. And then Connected for Kids is their advisory committee on children's services. So I go as a Connected for Kids.
They don't even think of you as a school board member.
So I don't think they think of me as a school board member. But, you know.
Okay.
But I did want to add that there are also, Martin County has a very successful roundtable, mm-hmm. and there are other groups, because at that Interagency Alliance meeting that I go to, it's in St. Lucie. It is in St. Lucie. They always report on what all the different roundtables, mm-hmm. and similar organizations are doing, and a lot of them do rally around children's issues, mm-hmm. because children's are one of those groups that really don't have organized advocates.
If I remember correctly, St. Lucie was juvenile crime. I mean, they had a cause. They they pulled together as a group because of this reason,
right.
which gave them, you know, something to start off with. So, yeah.
Well, we've almost used that extra.
extra 30 minutes.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And before we get started on the discussion session and the purpose of it, I shared with Ms. Disney something that was written by a very long time ago, back in 1986. And that is, you haven't seen this yet, Dr. Adams, but a district's greatest asset. And it's something that I wrote for School Board News, which I think has morphed into American Board, American. It was a national publication, and I forget
what. School Board Journal, ABSJ.
Yes. So that's what it was back in the old days. It was called School Board News, but I thought it was appropriate as we go into superintendent evaluations, because I think my words of wisdom back then are probably pertinent today. So you can evaluate for yourself. I'm not asking you to grade it and turn it back in. I thank you all very much for saying that we're going to set some framework and some other things. We have a great deal of information here. I'd also like to thank Ms. Disney and Ms. Jimenez for the monumental work they've done thus far on the superintendent's evaluation. And shall we get started?
Okay. Well, for me, as I said last week, this was more about sharing information that I've learned, but because I've had the opportunity to travel and attend so many sessions on school board governance. And what you have before you in the packet is a compilation of stuff that we already have in the district, things that I've gleaned from different workshops that I've been to, and even this first page is notes that I took at a workshop. And this is really basically what we're here for today, is so that we can define for ourselves what we believe we should be doing with a mission statement, a vision statement, the superintendent's objectives, which are a reflection of the board's goals, and the strategic plan, which is also referred to in some of this paperwork as district goals. And I think therein lies a lot of the confusion, is that people are using in different areas. The business arena, for instance, talks about strategic plan objectives. We have district goals, we have superintendent's objectives. I think that is where a lot of the confusion lies, is that we all don't know which words are being used interchangeably and what each of these phrases means. So that's one of the first things that we have to do, is come to an agreement about what all these things mean and what they're going to be used for. Because over and over, boards everywhere are creating goals, and superintendents are creating strategic plans, and then it's a document that gets put on the shelf. And after all those hours of work and all those hours of conversation, it isn't actually a working, breathing document. And I think that's what we really need to come down to, is agree on what it all means and what we're doing with it, so that it is a useful document that's meaningful, and we can use it to guide us as we go through our journey of continuous improvement. One of the things I shared with the superintendent earlier is we have back in some of our previous work some very specific target goals, and those target goals I feel were misused, in that they shouldn't have been the board's goals. They should have actually been used in the strategic plan, and the target goals that you put numbers on, hard numbers on, should be used in the strategic plan, where you then create a plan of work of how you're going to get to those goals. But to make them an outright district goal of, 90% of this many kids are going to have this kind of grade and fall, I mean, that is that's much too specific to be a board goal. We need to be more general with board goals. There should only be 3 to 5 of those, and they should be broad statements. There's an example of strategic plan goals, and these are this is how the wording is used differently. You know, if these were district goals and these four on this first page were our goals, you see how broad they are. They don't have the specific targets in them. That would go in the strategic plan document that the superintendent would create. So if we could all, first of all, just agree on the terminology we're going to use and agree what things mean, that would give us a language to use as we're talking our way through all of this. I think.
Well, and I agree, and I also agree wholeheartedly on goals being overreaching goals, that they are goals that we're going to be setting. And when you look at some of our previous goals, I know I'm pretty sure it was the first year back in 2006 that we had, there were 12, 15 goals, and they were so specific. There was, not only were they setting the goal, and that's what we have to be careful of, and I think that's what Ms. Disney is saying. We need to be committed to the fact that we're not going to set the goal, and within the goal, set how it's going to be implemented. That's, and I found that very, very inappropriate. They were not overreaching goals, which is what we're supposed to be, in my opinion. What I feel I need to be setting for the superintendent. So, and then there may be some goals that the superintendent feels adamantly about that, you know, would be the same type of goal, that are, you know, a bigger picture goal, with some things that you or your team feels is very important to us. And I can think of at least two offhand. I won't bring them up because we don't need to discuss those right now. That's not the place for it. But no, I agree. We need to set those parameters.
As you were talking, you know, you talked about the strategic plan being general and having overreaching goals.
No, that's not what she said.
Well, you said it was general, and then you said it was overreaching goals. That's what I. Let me just tell you what I heard, and then you can tell me. You know,
okay.
You talked about district goals, you talked about board goals, you talked about superintendent goals. I think it's important to clarify that language, because just from what I heard, it's obvious that I heard something different than your intent, because I can't be in your mind understanding what your intent is, and you can't be in my mind understanding how I understand what you say. So not
Understood.
Trying to be confusing,
Understood.
But I
yes.
think that that's part of the problem, that we make assumptions about each other, and then we also have to be willing to listen to how it is perceived. Because if we don't understand how we're perceived, then we're not going to be able to move forward, because there's going to be a continual, we're going to be working in opposite directions. So for me, it's important to understand what is the difference between a strategic plan, a district goal, a board goal, and superintendent goals, or any other goals that are out there, so that I can understand this. Because I sat down and I revisited a lot of those plans, and I've understood a lot of it differently. So I think that this is very timely. If we are going to work together on this, we need to have a common starting point.
And that was exactly my point, was that these words are all used interchangeably, and I don't know that we all agree on what the different language means. In this one example, they refer to strategic plan goals, which is also something that we might call it a district goal, and somebody else might call it a. There's just a lot of ways it can be phrased. So we have to agree on the language. And in my mind, the way it would work is that we would have board goals. We would have superintendent objectives, which is what we would align in the evaluation, and that the strategic plan would be created by the superintendent and staff, aligning both of those to the plan of work.
And usually a strategic plan is over time. In other words, if the superintendent has a strategic plan based on, you know, those board goals, then it's like over usually like a 3-year period of time. So strategic to me means more than 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
It takes that information that you, those goals that you want, say, okay, what can we expect that you will be doing over the next couple of years?
You might recognize this paper that says the right question. When the superintendent brought the EPIC information to us in the information session, you had this whole packet by Tony Wagner. What I did in this is I just carved out the foremost, what I felt, relevant paragraphs to this particular conversation. And it has talks about mission statement, vision, core values, and five objectives, which objectives being used in the way I just used four goals. So that is something that a document that you're very familiar with. And then further back in the packet, there's something that has the five roles.
I'll get it.
In the five roles on page 13, the district strategic plan, it would be where the board would create the goals, the superintendent would create that strategic plan, and in that strategic plan would have the defined target.
What page are you on? Page 9?
13.
Oh, you're on 13. I'm looking at your strategic plan. Sorry.
Yeah. And I'm sorry that it's such a bad copy, but it's a copy of a copy. And then the page before, page 9, where it says the organizational system roles, it talks about strategic, tactical, and operational. And strategic would be the board with our development of policies and our goals and our superintendent's objectives. The tactical would be the superintendent and her strategic plan, her data, her artifacts. And then operational would be the principals, and then they would have their school improvement plan. So it shows the flow of how you take the work that you're doing and actually make it a document that applies throughout the system so that everybody's using the same language, the same goals, and the same vision.
I think that it clarified some of it. So the board makes the goals, the superintendent creates the objectives, or the board makes the objectives for the superintendent. I don't see where the teamwork is, because I hear that the superintendent is meeting with her staff to identify their goals for the district. And at some point later today, we're going to talk about our goals. And then at some point in the future, we're going to see where the alignment is. And then based on that, there are going to be objectives created, and then the superintendent creates the strategic plan to make those objectives. And that's something that's going to happen over time. That's what I'm hearing. Since I seem to be the one that doesn't hear problems. I want to make sure I
understand. And I think that the reason that I'm coming together is I see things that, you know, our team is going to see things that have to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to, you know, we're going to be working on those. The goal is to bring them to you to see how they align with where you think that the district is going to be going. That's not necessarily to change your mind, but we certainly want to be trying to work in alignment.
Right.
And I'm sure there will be a lot of, you know, overlap. But and I know you're interested in what we think, you know, we need to be working on.
And there are school districts where the superintendent sets the goals, mm-hmm. and then they are given to the board after the superintendent sets the goals. Not going to work here, but I'm just saying, I think
that's right.
Yeah, that there are school districts where that happens. And then the superintendent, once the board has had their input and their suggestions and any possible changes, then you align what your strategies are going to be to carry out those. And so
it gives me a chance to influence you on
absolutely.
What the team thinks
absolutely.
You know, we need to
and
be
I
working on, and then you know you decide from there.
I'm not saying there'll be things that we will embrace, but
right.
you know,
exactly.
But that's how we can at least be part of a team. And I think that was Ms. Jimenez's concern: is how do we be part of a team if we're setting goals and then you're setting goals, and so. I don't think that there's any attempt on either the board or the superintendent's part to arbitrarily just say, this is what we're going to do next year. That's not this board. That's not how this board has operated thus far. So.
Well, speaking of that, I'll speak for myself. I have some concern that because now that we're diving in, we can see this is not going to be a quick process. It's going to be a process over time. We want to make sure that your evaluation is aligned with all this work we're doing, but also, you know, painfully aware of the amount of time this is taking and that you don't have your evaluation tool established, you know, today and knowing how you're going to be evaluated next year. I mean, is it reasonable to expect that we're going to end up with a tool further down the line and you're going to just, you know, be evaluated with it? Or are you going to expect that we stick to the tool we have right now because we have not created that new tool yet?
Well, first of all, I think it's important that the board come up with a tool that everybody is comfortable with. I really do, and I think there are some good examples of things in here, you know, that can be looked at. Number two, I can't believe that I'm not going to be working on things that you don't think are, you know, very important.
I agree.
And so that is not a big concern that I have. I feel like you would be talking to me individually if there was something that you had, you know, had on your mind that you feel like I should be doing. I will say straight up, what we better be talking about is more on the academic achievement side and putting our focus and our energy there this year in terms of how we're going to, you know, get on track of where we, you know, need to be. So that will be a lot of where my time and energy is going to be. But as you go from, you know, that to working with the community and making, helping the community understand, I think that's all part of it, you know. So I'm okay with the flexibility, but you can't wait till the December to say, well, this is how you're going to be evaluated. I think that working together is fine. My focus is going to be on starting out on.
Well, to answer your concern, the way I'm starting to feel that coming together is, the board is going to come up with some goals. The superintendent and her team are going to come up with some goals, and we're going to sit at a table and we're going to come up with a list of district goals with the two sides coming together. Mm-hmm. And then from those district goals, the board is going to create a list of objectives for the superintendent, and that is going to be embedded into the evaluation. And the superintendent's going to create a strategic plan from those district goals. And that's going to embedded in there are going to be all the targets. Does that sound right?
I think that makes sense. However, I still am concerned that with the school year starting in August, in 2 or 3 weeks, we start the school year. This is going to involve a few workshops, at least, to have this conversation and hammer it out. And by the time that happens, we'll be into the school year, and we have the current evaluation tool. And my concern is that I would feel that it is unfair, in the same way that it has been unfair, the way the state constantly changes the expectations. You know, after the test is taken, then they go back and fix it. I would not want to do that to the superintendent with her tool or with his, you know, with the tool for the superintendent, regardless of who the person is. We have a tool that we're all familiar with, and I don't think we're going to be ready to begin the school year with whatever tool we want to use. And I think we should have a conversation as to whether it's fair midway to come up with the tool and then say, okay, this is the tool we're going to use. I don't know how the superintendent feels about it, and I don't know how other board members feel about it, but that to me is a little unsettling, because regardless of what improvements that tool needs, that's what we've been using, and then to change it midway, which is what would most likely happen by the time we have these meetings, set the goals, set the objectives, come up with strategies, and say, okay, these are the things that we're going to look for in that tool.
You're right.
So that's a concern.
You're right.
And I just...
You're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. One of the things I wanted to say is that you've been given a couple of models, you know, in terms of looking strategically. I just wanted to mention that this one that was given is is similar to how the school leaders are evaluating them. Similar in that, while they call them standards here, and they are broad standards with some specific indicators underneath them.
Mm-hmm.
The way you look at a school leader now is you look at it by domain, which has student achievement, instructional leadership, organizational leadership, professional and moral ethics, and of deliberate practice. This similarly takes that broad area, and then underneath it, it has indicators of what. So I'm just trying. It's similar to that. Indicators that would show that you have some competency in that area. Then additionally, what it does is it gives the board questions that you might ask the superintendent to say. It's those two things. It gives questions to the board that you might ask the superintendent to see if you feel like that person is competent in that area. And then it also gives the superintendent ideas for evidence and the board ideas for evidence that might show that, in fact, you are competent in those areas. So this is aligns itself a little bit more with what
and
the principal and school leaders are.
And I've actually summarized that for you. And that handout that you're getting, the section that you're looking at where it says Iowa model, those are the five, those are the six areas that are the focus of that model. And then on the right, I didn't include the questions, but I included some sample artifacts. So I went through each one of them, identified the main topic, shared vision, what does that mean, development, articulation, implementation, and stewardship of the vision shared and supported by the school community. And obviously we're talking about the vision of the school district. So I did that for all those areas. And what I wanted to do was make it continuous, because if you turn to the other side of that sheet, what I did with that was I looked, the very first column is our evaluation, dimensions, headlines, topics, however you want to call them, they are printed there. And then I looked at the evaluation from Orange County, Hillsborough County, St. John's, and Collier. Those are the ones that we were able to get when Ms. Stang did a shout-out. And I tried to see where they aligned going across. And I just thought that there were some interesting areas. If you, for example, if you look at academic success in Orange, the wording is differently. In St. John's, they're talking about performance. In Collier County, they actually have a really interesting tool where they do 50% performance outcomes and 50% professional standards. And they look at quality learning experience, and then they look at student performance separately. And not that I'm saying that that's what we need to do, but there are a lot of different ways that we can look at this. And I think that they have to reflect what the needs are in our community, because the human capital piece, however you call it, you know, there has to be fiscal responsibility, there has to be leadership, there has to be facilities management. There are things that are given that have to happen regardless of whether or not they're specific goals. Those things have to happen. And then there are things that are specific goals, especially under student achievement, that we need to go into with laser focus. So I just kind of did this to, you know, put this out there, because there are different ways of doing this. And I think because of this, you know, I don't think we're going to get this done in a very small number of workshops if we really want to dig deep into the evaluation, and especially when it comes to, you know, to how we're going to hold the superintendent accountable in terms of the artifacts. Because, again, it depends on what those goals are. But here, for example, if you look in under Hillsborough County, they had one specific area that looked specifically at curriculum planning and development. They had another one that looked specifically at labor relations. So they broke down things that were important to their reality as a school district. And that's what I hope that we're able to do, that we look at what are the things we have to do regardless, and what are the areas that are our growing edges those are the areas where we can better hold our superintendent accountable, because the fiscal, it's going to have to happen, you know, but there are some areas where we need to dig a little deeper. So I thought this might help, and I have a binder here that has all of those evaluations, you know, and they're all available. Ms. Stang has them, so she can forward them to you if you'd like them.
I don't see the Florida strategic plan in this packet. I know it was emailed to everybody. Were copies made as well?
Yes, it looks like
behind
that.
It's behind
that.
No,
it looks like this. I actually have
it. Behind it. It is. It's here. I didn't know that. Yeah, okay. All right, great. So it sounds like to me that we all have a similar idea of how this is going to go. We just haven't agreed on that language.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's behind us, right here.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. The reason that I asked that this be copied, I mean, aside from the fact that it's a document we should all be familiar with, is that I thought it might be helpful for us to look at the way that they are using the mission statement and the vision statement, and there's, you know, and I didn't pull this together until after I had already written these definitions that I was given, but the mission tells why you exist, and the vision statement tells where you're going, and ours don't really do that. You know, there is a copy of them on the front of the Florida strategic plan for you to look at those. So ours don't really do that. And while we spent a lot of time doing this, I think we had a different objective when we did this than we do now. So if we were going to tie all this together so that, as Wagner says, that you know, anyone in your community can pick it up and look at it and understand exactly what the organization is about. You know, that helps for people to understand what our goals are and what we're about and what is important to us. So I don't know that we are doing that with the statements that we have up there right now.
Well, I guess vision, your ultimate goal is to educate and inspire every student to be successful. I think that's pretty worthy. I think that's pretty that ideal, you know. And one of the things for vision and mission is you want it short, where somebody can remember it. And so we've said, well, the way that we're going to do that is to serve all students with excellence. So I kind of always thought you guys did a really good job on that one. It's short, succinct. It tells you that the ideal is that our students are going to be successful and that we're going to serve them no matter what capacity that we're in with excellence to help them get there. And that's kind of the way I've always looked at that.
I see.
Well, I think I've already spoken. I haven't heard other women speak about this, but
I think for starters, in the way we present it, we have it backwards. The mission, it doesn't matter, but I think that what's missing here is that this is, and it goes to show, I don't really understand a lot about missions and visions, but to me this is a little bit too vague. And when I look at these, they're longer, they're not as concise, but they actually tell you what you can expect. For example, in the vision, to which is what you do to achieve the mission, you're not just serving those students, but you are preparing them in this vision to be globally competitive for college and careers. So that gives you something a little bit more tangible. Because to serve all students with excellence can just, depending on who sees it, you can define excellence in a lot of different ways. It's very general, but I think that's what these things are supposed to be like. And I think in the end, what's important is what you do. I think this is wonderful to get everybody on board with the philosophy, but I would rather spend my time on trying to figure out what it is that we need to do and how we're going to get there. Because this is a lot of wordsmithing, a lot of the philosophical stuff that, you know, I understand this was done years ago, and it professionals were brought in, and the entire staff was trained, and there was a lot of time invested. And I think that there is so much urgent work to do that I'd rather spend my time on. You know, we're going to serve all students, and we want to educate and inspire them. We can figure out nice ways to say it, but I want to get the work done. I want to talk about what are the goals, what are the things we need to do, and move forward. But that's just me. I understand that a lot of these pieces are important, and I don't mean to be dismissive or flippant in any way, but just thinking of the superintendent's tool and the amount of time it's going to take to rework that, and thinking that when this was created, professionals were brought in and it took so much staff time and everybody's time. You know, just one board member thinks that we may not have the... I don't want to be, as a board member, busy doing this stuff. I want to do the work that needs to be done to get students and support teachers and do what needs to be done. This is going to take a lot of time also.
And I think it's all very important work. I mean, I really do. The timing of it is bad. I mean, here we are. It's August 1st almost, and we're doing this. So I think that I feel that same sense of urgency in terms of I would like to know what the board is expecting, because that's the work. There is work to be done. But why can't we be working on this other throughout the year? But you know, in terms of the goals, but it's all important work.
Yeah, I think part of the reason that these conversations take place before is so that people actually start talking, and that they start talking with respect for one another's opinion, and then start talking about what's important to them. And we established last week, at least I felt like we established last week, that the core beliefs are something that we all feel are really important and something that are all still very relevant to us. So those are attached on the front there, too, because that does say a lot about who we are. And, in fact, probably is a better reflection to the community about how we think than either our vision or our mission statement, because they are so vague. I think when people read those core beliefs, they get a better idea of what we're doing. So I understand about the moving on, and in fact Wagner does say that the important part is to agree on the goals and values, and then you can define the tasks later, which that's what those things are. It's really tasks. And, so I'm okay with that, but I think it's if we understand what a mission statement is supposed to be and understand what a vision is supposed to be, it helps us to then later, you know, now define what are goals and what are objectives and what are, you know, evaluation criteria. So can we get that out of the way, is the terminology that we're going to use, so that we can start talking in that one language? And I like district goals myself. I think that implies that exactly what we said is that the board has a conversation about goals, the superintendent has one, and then we bring them all together and we meld them together into a common set of district goals for all the students.
Okay.
Yeah? Okay. Is that the word?
Yep.
District goals?
Great.
Okay. And then from that, the board will take and create superintendent objectives.
Yes. Right.
And the superintendent will take and create a strategic plan
to fulfill those objectives.
Okay, and then we will use the objectives in the goal, in the evaluation tool, and use the outcomes from the strategic plan as the artifacts. Yes, and those artifacts will be defined as we get closer, further along, and know what our objectives are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that was easy.
Not quite. I have one concern, and I think I stated this earlier, but I still have a concern that it's very difficult to evaluate someone when they have not had the time on specific goals, when they have not had the time to incorporate that into the organization. And I just feel, I think time is a big predictor of success. And if we're going to set up goals to evaluate the superintendent and objectives to, if I'm trying to use the right language here, objectives to evaluate the superintendent on, I don't know how, when school starts in 2 weeks, that we can set into we're not going to be ready in 2 weeks for those objectives to go out into our school community.
And I hear you. And that is the traditional, the old school form of looking at a goal setting with the continuous improvement process.
Right.
There isn't a start of a school year, an end of a school year.
And you made that very clear when we had our... However, I feel as though if we are at the end of the school year, if we're sticking to that schedule, for us to set goals in X number of months, we're going to hold the superintendent accountable for.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to either rethink the entire schedule. Is it always going to be at the time of the superintendent's contract? Are we looking at what's going to be happening within a school year, when I don't think there's anybody at this table who doesn't have at least one example of where we have gone far afield of what the objectives are that we have at times evaluated superintendents on?
You know, I think it's in the objectives, is what you tailor towards how much time you have to achieve these objectives. So
the
goal may be to... the goal is that every dog is clean in the county. The objective is that you visit every kennel by the end of the year. But if you start the goal halfway through the year, then you're going to say visit 50% of the kennels, you know, sort of thing. So the objective is tailored towards when you're going to be doing this evaluation.
And I understand that, Karen. But again, if this process is old school, we need to be looking at the entire process, because we have an obligation within the superintendent's contract, and I'm not sure exactly how it is stated, but to do those evaluations and to make those observations and to report to the community in a time certain. So I think that we need to back up as to what our obligation is to make that happen for both the community and the superintendent. That's my concern.
Well, we can do that going forward, but we can't go back in time right now. So
no, we can't.
I mean, that's
why I'm talking about the timing of all of this. Even when we have been very direct in previous years with previous superintendents as to what we expected, and this, and I don't know what professionals Ms. Jimenez was referring to, because we had unpaid people who came in here and helped us with some of these processes, so I don't know what professionals you were talking about that we brought in to set these.
No, I had heard that maybe like in 2008 or one of those meetings when you came up with this, I wasn't on the board, and again, it's all hearsay because there's no history anywhere that I found, but there were people that came in to help with this process.
We had a person who came in unpaid.
And was that while I was on the board?
No, we had another person when you came in who came in unpaid.
Unpaid.
I just want to make clear that we did not pay for any group of professionals to come in here and set the vision statement, the mission statement, and our core beliefs. And actually, when we redid, when you were here, mm-hmm. we streamlined the number of core beliefs that we had. We had a huge number from the first time, but those were unpaid people. They were not paid.
So it's always been in the history of this board. It's
since 2006.
Been. Okay.
And
I stand corrected. I am just repeating what I hear.
Well, I don't, and it doesn't matter, but maybe you want to correct that person who told you we brought in a bunch of professionals, because we did not.
It has been done different times in the history.
Mm-hmm. But I wasn't on the board then, so I can't attest to that. I know since I've been here, we've done it twice.
once when we first got on the board, and then
and so when you did it is when this came aboard, or did you
in 2006?
No, we did those.
We did this.
You did those
we
in
did
2006.
This.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, I believe
I don't remember them existing.
I don't. I there was a there was a only thing it set up there was a community partnership toward educational excellence, which is still up there.
Which is our tagline.
Which is our tagline. Yeah. Which is our tagline. But no, nobody was paid to come in here either time.
I did want to follow up on your concern about time, because even though it takes time to change the culture and to make change, the superintendent gets evaluated every year. So regardless of the amount of time, we do have to have realistic indicators that we can use in order to evaluate the superintendent. And Ms. DeGress, is that something you could look into for us, what the wording is in the contract, so that we know what our commitment is? Okay, thank you.
I think I have the timeline.
Well, I saw that it's on the very back of Everett Public Schools. There's a chart.
Oh, no, that's not it. That's an example that I brought for how a board creates a plan of work. And then the superintendent had actually created that chart of when we were going to learn those things. But it's just an example of how the board itself creating standards for itself and a plan of work can actually make sure we get things done in a timely manner.
But it is embedded in the contract. I know it is.
Yes, there's a paragraph that discusses the timing.
I did this based on the contract.
Right.
When I created this, I used the contract as a guide. I brought this with me. I brought a copy of the evaluation and this with me just to read.
That's the hardest thing, just like it is with school administrators. There's a lot of information comes in, does not come in a timely manner in terms of when you have to evaluate, when I've got more, leeway. But when you if you're, doing that evaluation before a certain date, the last few years we haven't had.
Right, because we don't have school grades.
With regard to
and I think even at one point there was a discussion, or at least someone said to me about, did we want to wait to do the evaluation until after school grades came in? And I said we need to refer to the contract.
Right. And that wouldn't be timely for you, for the board.
Well, that's
You're waiting until middle of July.
Or August. You just can't use that as an artifact.
No, right.
You can't.
So what you have to think about are what other things can you use along the way that would give indicators.
Yes. Very good.
We're making you do all the heavy lifting here, Karen. Thank you very much. I know you and Ms. Jimenez did a lot of work together. Thank you for doing this.
I'm trying to figure out which document kind of helps us move on to the next level here.
I assume you're trying to move to so now let's move on to what our board goals are. Is that where we're trying to move
now? That would
now?
Be good.
District goals?
Well, those would be the goals once we combine the superintendent goals and the board goals. So we are actually talking about board goals. I would suggest something as simple as what are our strengths and what are our growing edges? Because our growing edges are obviously going to be the areas where we're going to be setting goals. And a lot of those goals, and for example, one of the things that I've been thinking a lot about is this whole idea of school climate. If children are not in a school climate where they are safe and where it's a positive environment, their achievement is not going to be what it can be, because they're going to have issues that are going to lead to truancy, to bad behavior, to suspensions, to expulsion. So even though that's not a grade, an FCAT grade, that school climate impacts that FCAT grade. And then the school climate also includes not just the children, but the teachers. Are the teachers supported? Do the teachers have time? Do they have adequate professional development? You know, so all of those things, I would think, would come into that conversation for goals. And what are the things that are we're really doing well? And I don't know how you want to say that so it's politically correct and it doesn't sound negative to the community, but, you know, part of when you set goals, you have to have an honest conversation about, okay, because if the things that we're doing well, we can just maintain, we can focus on the areas of growth. And just, in my opinion, that might be the way we start our board goals, or we can... You know, I don't see how else, unless we have like some kind of a menu checklist that we want to go through. So I just want to get the conversation going.
Well,
does each goal have to be measurable?
Our district goals, the example of how they would read is on this page right here, where they are not they're not real specific, but the superintendent will put the measurable part into the strategic plan.
It needs to be something that you can provide evidence or artifacts to show that something has been done.
I'm feeling myself well. On that page, that the Wagner page, it says to ask yourself these questions in order to get the conversation started, which is what we're trying to do. What are our strengths and weaknesses? What is our vision, and what are our core values for a better school district? Mm-hmm. What are our priorities and strategies for change? What structure do we need to reach our goals, and what new skills and resources will we need? Those are some conversation starters for how we can get down to the goals that we actually want to have. One of the topics that rattles around in my head a lot is professional development, and whether that's part of a larger goal or it's its own goal, I just feel that there's such a need to get this professional development right. I know there's a lot of energy, effort, and money going into it, but I just don't know if we're actually hitting it where, you know, the right way, because I just keep hearing teachers express dissatisfaction with it, and I hear that there's so much to be done, and it may be partly me not understanding exactly what we do. I agree with that, but I think that a conversation about professional development really is in order, so that we either are schooled on it or we create a bigger goal for how we want to make sure that our teachers understand that we value professional development, because that's maybe exactly where we're missing it, is that we're not doing something to communicate that to our, not only our teachers, but our employees.
And I think, you know, that's an issue that I also have been concerned about, and I know that when I was looking back at the school year and reflecting on our accomplishments, you know, I think Dr. Adams has done a great job with a lot of those leadership roles in human resources, in facilities, in other areas. But this area it's obvious it's our weakest link. And I think that now that she's had an opportunity to clean up those other areas, and hopefully we'll see positive results from the leadership in those areas, that the time is right to have this conversation, because that area needs support. And I think we need clarification as board members, because we do hear so many different messages about what's going on with professional development, and it's very difficult to try to offer any feedback when it's like with my example with the mission vision, you sure. know, it's all hearsay. People will come and say something, you're like, okay, I'll take a note of that, because you just don't know, and you're trying honestly to get the information, but you just don't have it. So we may need some information.
Now, board, I would encourage you to think bigger, and let me give you one of the standards that you pulled out that gets to climate and, okay, an educational leader promotes the success of all students by advocating, nurturing, and sustaining a school culture and instructional program conducive to student learning and professional development. So that's broad, okay? So then under that, there are will be specific things that you'll, you know, want to look at. So you need these statements, these standards such as this, because it's getting to the very thing that you're talking about, you know? It provides leadership for assessing, developing, and improving the climate and culture. I think when you look at things like this, you begin to focus on what are the important things to you this year, but it gives you that broader context to look at rather than just saying professional development or school climate. So you need these standards, these statements that and what you wouldn't expect out of your educational leader of the district. And I would encourage you to go back and look at this, because I'm becoming more familiar with this just in the realm of evaluating the principals. And within each one of these, you can see there are indicators that will give you more feedback as to whether your educational leader is meeting that standard. So both of the things that you've talked about fall under that standard. You know, if you look at the first standard, I mean, I reviewed these and I think they're very good. A superintendent is an educational leader who promotes the success of all students, and that's kind of the initiate. That's the first part, by the development, articulation, and implementation of stewardship of a vision of learning that is shared and supported by the school community. You are interested in the community knowing more about and supporting, you know, what our vision is. And it gives several things that the superintendent can do to show that, in fact, I'm meeting that standard. So I think it's a good starting point, because you're getting down to very specific things where you want a bigger picture than that. There are several things that should be falling underneath that. And it only has four standards. I think it's four. But within those four standards, it has very specific things underneath that reflect what the superintendent could do to meet that standard. So I think, you know, you have some specific things that you want to say, professional development, school climate, and I think you're going to find it within these standards.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's also the piece that professional development, for instance, fits into a couple of areas of goals that I'm thinking, like a goal of improving our relationship with our employees, through our negotiation process, through our better customer service to them, through mm-hmm. better professional development. You know, that's also something that's on my mind. Mm-hmm. So with student achievement, you need to have a professional development piece. With improving work conditions for our employees, you need to have a professional development piece. So there's overlap in some of the superintendent's objectives for different goals that I would have in my head. Mm-hmm. So coming down to defining the goals and then the objectives that are going to be under it, it's sort of a bit of a puzzle for me, you know, how we're going to arrange this.
When you were talking about professional development, this is something you and I talked about. We talked about the leadership and the fact that we have had vacancies in some significant departments. Mm-hmm. And the quality of applicants and other things. Mm-hmm. And you and I talked about that element of growing leaders. Mm-hmm. And I still say that is very important. I think it's great. I think it keeps our posture straight to bring people in from outside. But I think we need to, you know, concentrate a little more on growing leaders. Mm-hmm. And that being said, I think there needs to be In my opinion, I just feel that there needs to be
I know there's accountability through the assessment of principals and those kinds of things, but I will go backwards a little bit, and that is, I don't know about my fellow board members, but then there have been a couple of times when I have gone into schools, don't have a badge on, and the customer service is not of a standard I think it should have been when you walk into a school. So that to me is also part of a school climate. That is a parent or the public's first impression, or even phone calls. I've gotten not a huge number over the years, but I have gotten phone calls about, I called so-and-so office, and that person was so rude and told me all their problems for the day and how overworked they were. And so if we're talking about principals, if we're talking about teachers, absolutely. I don't think there's any question that any board member doesn't feel the importance of professional development. Mm-hmm. But that leadership role, that person who is going to bring back the message to their school, when they leave a principal's meeting, there needs to be a different thing. There just needs to be a change. Mm-hmm. There needs to be a change. And an accountability for what those things are.
So should we just express some
yes.
areas that we're
yes.
interested
yes.
in
yes.
and
yes.
see how
yes.
we can start
so
stacking
So let's just throw some things out
up
in the air and see. You know.
Okay. So security.
Yes.
And I heard, well, of course, academic achievement, everybody has.
I already have that.
Has had that. And professional development.
Right.
And Claudia, what was the first
school
thing?
Climate.
School climate.
Mm-hmm. And labor relations, you mentioned it.
Excuse me?
Labor relations.
Well, I'm not too sure we need to, I think we need to say employee relations, because we do have some employees who who are not involved in either of the unions.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that,
okay.
I think labor relations absolutely are very important, but I mean, I look at the past few years and there are people who have no voice.
The other phrase that was used was customer service.
Thank you.
Customer service was the other phrase that
yes.
board members
yes.
had in the phrases I was writing down.
Aren't you going to say Mexican tax?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Community engagement.
What did we have this year under the evaluation on community? How did we phrase that for this year? Because I know that's one of the big things we had for Dr. Adams when she first came on.
The communication and community engagement piece.
We had something in the evaluation, and I don't remember what it was.
Communication and community engagement promotes, demonstrates, and supports effective time and two-way communication throughout stakeholders. They're all listed out.
Okay,
they're listed out, though.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
fosters positive working relationships with community stakeholder groups, et cetera. Maintains visibility, works to increase parental and community involvement. And they're longer than
right,
that.
That's fine.
Informs staff of relevant information as possible, provides information from all perspectives and clarifies issues to the board, visits school sites and communicates with staff, and fosters a transparent environment in which information is fully disseminated to the public. Any other?
I think another area is the flow of information, timely, and sharing information.
Sharing information or
yeah.
timeliness of information?
Both.
Okay. So that's an area you feel needs improvement?
Yes.
I'm sitting here really enjoying this because I remember in 2006
I know.
Our list of weaknesses came much easier and was pretty mm-hmm. long. It was many pages.
And I guess the ongoing is the transparency in terms of, again, going back to information, just the availability and transparency of information for the community.
So that's one.
Are you saying that was a question? That wasn't a statement. Are you saying
transparency?
Yeah,
transparency.
Transparency and availability of information is what you just said. So does that go along with sharing of information and timeliness of information? Is that one? That's my question.
It could be.
Or are you saying that's two separate?
It could
goals.
Be. Well, I think the transparency should be a goal, just because we're always striving to comply with Sunshine State standards and make sure that information that is subject to the public record is available to the public without hindrance or barriers. So maybe it could
you
be
mean
a separate
Sunshine Law.
Sunshine Law, sorry, what did I say?
You can choose.
Sunshine
That's
State standards.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, I knew exactly what you meant.
You've been around me for 2 months.
One of the things I'm going to add to this as a vulnerability that we have is moving this district staff to a suitable office. And the reason I'm putting it on there is it's been such a challenge to us financially, perceptually, from the community, just the willingness to go forward with it when there's so many other needs. So for me, I'm going to put it on the list as one of our weaknesses, because it's been such a challenge since, in 7 years, we've been talking about doing it, and we haven't gotten any closer to, you know, making it a reality. So.
Well, and hopefully we'll be able to.
It may not make the final cut, but I am putting it on as one of our weaknesses.
I think it is a weakness. I think not being able to address that in a timely manner is certainly a weakness. That was certainly an issue in 2006,
yeah.
And we're coming up on 2014. The other side of coming up. Just better than us.
An employee relationship. Are we gonna break these out further, or which is one of the big ideas?
My preference is big ideas, and that's why I asked Ms. Jimenez if she was looking at those two under one. Mm-hmm. One to me, they go hand in hand. Is the reason I said that. So I wouldn't think you want two. That's why I asked her to clarify, did she feel those needed to be two separate goals? To me, they would be fall under the same overreaching goal.
Any others?
You know, I think another area that we've talked about is the issue of time. And I think that could, I don't know if it would go under professional development, but teachers having time to do. You know, I think that's a weakness that we have in the district.
But that you feel would go under
everybody
time.
Has the time issue, honestly. Mm-hmm. I mean, not only teachers, but we are working on staffs that are smaller than they should be, and the amount of the workload that we're expecting from people.
And I think that's something we have been very creatively avoiding is... and I chide myself for this too, and that's for not having a discussion on the workload, because we have people who have picked up additional people who have been with us for a while who have taken on additional responsibilities, and you know, many of those, not only did we not make additional compensation for them, we actually cut their pay for many years, and yet there doesn't seem to be an overall plan to allow some of that to be taken off of some people, and I think we're doing ourselves a disservice with that. And I don't know exactly how to categorize that, but
well,
I have some great concerns there as far as organizational effectiveness. I don't that's way too broad, but I do have some. I think we've become very organizationally efficient, but I'm not too sure we have been as effective. As evidenced by the fact that now we have somebody on board who can do some HR, you know, in an effective manner. We tried to be really getting the work done, efficiently done, and getting it done to the best of our ability. I think are two different things.
So you're going to, what your goal is, one of your goals is to evaluate the superintendent based on coming up with a plan on time?
We're still in the big idea.
We're still in the big idea. All right.
And some of these are going
to
fall off.
I just want to be sure. Okay.
Some of these will be absorbed into broader topics. Some will fall off. Some will. Academic achievement, I see, is staying its own goal with a lot of.
Me too. I have.
And we're going to do 3 to 5.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things that, again, I like about this is we're in the business of success for students. Mm-hmm. That is our bottom line. Yeah. Whether you want employee relations, whether you want school climate, the overarching thing mm-hmm. is student success as it applies to how you use your time, what professional development you do. So, I think that piece is overarching mm-hmm. to everything.
So we want to have really big would be, that would be our goal.
Period. Mm-hmm. Student success.
I'm just saying, that would be our goal.
I think that's a vision statement.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Well, I think we've already articulated that.
So whatever else you do should be contributing to that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Whatever else you put on my list should be contributing to success for students. Mm-hmm. That's why we'd like you to keep that in mind. Because I think that's the responsibility of your educational leader. If it's community relations, then as it relates to how are we going to get families and the community involved in student success.
And the community involved with student success does not necessarily mean that we're going to get families involved because of the situation with our family units now, we have to have other resources.
Right.
Besides an expectation that someone is going to show up.
But doing the best we can.
But we're doing the best we can, absolutely.
And do better.
And that comes with communication as well as anything.
This is more like reflecting that cartoon that we saw when we did the continuous improvement, where we've got, like you were saying, if you're going to add this to my goal, mm-hmm. it has to relate to that goal of student success. And it just calls to mind that cartoon where we do all our business and the kids are out there like, mm-hmm. Wait, what about me, what about me? And one of the things that brings up to me, especially after seeing the last iteration of our school grades, is that we talk about academic achievement, but we rarely ask ourselves, what impact is all of this stress around testing, around school grades, having on our kids? And then also on our teachers, because since all of this grading has become the end-all and be-all of how we're funded, how we're perceived, that seems to be our focus, and we never say, how is this affecting our kids? When they read about their school would have been an S school, would have been a this school, would have been a that school, they've been working hard, their teachers have been working hard, and what can we do as a district to promote some balance around what it means to be a valuable, successful student? Is it just about that grade? Because there's so much else that happens in our schools and so much else that our teachers do in our schools that is not reflected in those grades. And I think that's my, when I tried to talk a few years ago about the whole child, that's what I keep going back to, that we've lost the whole child. Teachers teach children. It's not about the statistics and the numbers. It's about the children. And we don't talk about the children. We just talk about their numbers. And I think that's getting old. And I think everybody's getting frustrated with that.
It's two things. Number one, we don't have any excuses. We have to get our students where they need to be. And it's hard work, and it may change the way I do business. It may change the way we do business in the classroom. But it has to happen, or we're not going to get the scores where we need. On the other hand, there has got to be that balance. What about student self-efficacy? How does the student feel about this, and how can we build that student having that, that understanding that they are part of this, and how can we make the student feel like they're part of this? I don't think we've done a good job of that. But the realities of academic achievement are here, and we can't build in reasons why we can't do it, because we must do it. Mm-hmm. But along the way, how are we, getting the work done, and how are we building that culture and the climate within the school that shares that leadership and makes sure that everybody's part of it and owning what our part of it is. And how do we get students to own it? Not in a negative way, but in a way that they feel like they have some control over their own destiny. You know, how do we do that in schools? So those are the things that we have to think about. But we can't make excuses. We have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
We have to do it. We've got to change what our expectations are. We've got to change our professional development. And when we do it, it means we have to go back and, as a leader, do what we said we were going to do. As a teacher, do what we said we were going to do. As a student, build them up and get them to where they need to be. So, you know, it is, how do we do that in a culture and a climate of support? And that's the piece that we need to work on. How do we do it in a climate of shared leadership where it's not just my job to make that happen. It's everybody's job to make it happen.
I'm not calling on people.
No, this has been great. I mean, I think like as a follow-up, you know, a conversation that we haven't had. Before I came, I printed out the assessment calendar for this year. And, you know, looking at all the tests that we give kids. You know, it's a given. I mean, there are things that we have to do to comply with the mandates of the state. And I'm not for a minute saying that we need excuses, that it's about, no, there are no excuses. All students can learn, no exceptions. I mean, I really believe that. But I do think that, you know, have we ever stopped and said, look at all of this testing? I remember the first year that we actually had a calendar, there were only 16 days. When you look at K through 12, that was like 2 years ago, I took the calendar and I highlighted everything. There were 16 days when some test was not being given. And now we've got the stat 9s,
stat 10s,
and then the Common Core is going to require even more testing, and then we have to do these other tests to make sure that we're on track for this test. And, you know, what impact does that have on children? What impact does that have on teaching? What impact does it have on the ability of teachers to actually work with these kids? If there's so much of this testing going on, do we ever look at that and say, is there any way we can pare that down so that our kids have more seat time learning versus continually taking tests? You know, I don't mean to be negative, but I think that we don't have those conversations.
Well, we're going to have those conversations because I think what you have to do is you have to monitor progress. And there may be lots of different ways to do that other than giving a test, okay? But you have to know where your students are. So I think that one of the ways that we have done it over the past several years is on benchmark assessment. And one of the things that I'd like to provide for the board that will give you the in-depth of where we are, because you need to see exactly where we are. You need to see, is the data that we're using valid? You know, what about it? So I'd like to propose that we set up a workshop. I mean, actually, I'd like to propose August 29th so that I can bring back what I think the superintendent's goals should be, give you a clear picture of where we are as a school district, and then, you know, even bring back some...
27th?
27th, yeah.
Is it the 29th?
27th is a Tuesday.
Yeah.
It's on a Tuesday.
Okay.
A board Tuesday.
It would be the 27th.
Okay. I didn't have that written down yet. So I'm suggesting, because we have perceptions, we have... we just need to look at our current reality. That's what I'm suggesting.
One of the things that comes to mind is when I was in this particular workshop, that's the one that says five roles, I guess, in the first, on page 27, there's an example of a school having created their set of beliefs, the same as the board has set, we've created our set of core beliefs. A school has set of beliefs. And when we were talking about this, they were saying, how many of your schools do prizes for test scores? You know, but we have schools that give out bicycles and different things, you know, over the FCAT testing. And they were not talking about FCAT specifically because this was a national convention I was at.
Mm-hmm.
But that we put focus on these grades, and then we wonder why the kids are stressed out. You know,
pep rallies.
When we have the pep rallies and the bicycles and the marquees and all this stuff, because if the school on this street has we're an A school and the school on this street doesn't right. have anything, it's pretty clear they weren't an A school, right? So, you know, we don't have control over the fact that we have to take state right. tests, but we do have control over how we act mm-hmm. and we behave. If we keep acting like this is not just any other day, well, the kids That's don't right. feel like it's just any other day. I know when my kids took the tests, I had T-shirts made that said, I survived, mm-hmm. you know, it named the hurricanes and said, FCAT, bring it on. In other words, they were just like, I'm strong, I can do this, you know, kind of attitude, rather than that yeah. intense focus on if you don't do well, you're going to be held back.
There was an interview on that, well, not on that, but there was a teacher of the year out in in Los Angeles, Rafi Esquith, and he wrote a book, Real Talk for Real Teachers or something like that, and he was talking about when he worked with his students, he would make a big deal out of the test. And he knew that, you know, you've got all this performance stuff going on, but when he worked with his kids, he would explain to them, this is something that we have to do, you know, that's mandated, it's a part of what you, you know, part of a reflection of who you are. And I think we've just strayed so much from that, and it's become, you know, it's in the paper because the state says it has to be in the paper, but, you know, people buy houses because of this.
Right.
And oh, my goodness. And then when you look at these grades, and when you look down the pike at what's coming, I mean, there are schools. I was shocked. One of our schools that's been an A school for years would have been a C school. How must those teachers and students feel? And then what does that mean?
Exactly.
What does that really mean?
That's right.
You know? We don't question that. We just look at that. Our community looks at that, and it's like bad schools, bad teachers, bad kids, and we don't control our story. And it's going to get worse.
Well, we have tried to control our story by putting information out ahead of time, really. But you need to understand it more than anybody because you have, you know, have your own networks, and so that's why we want to have a chance to really inform you about what it means. And, you know, school grade is, it's been manipulated in so many different ways now over the last few years that we really need to be looking at our data. The data tells the story, you know, more than a school grade. There are schools out there that have been an A in the past that may be in the lowest 150 schools in the state. Well, what does that mean? So our community certainly has a perception, as does the state of Florida, about what those school grades mean, but what's really behind that, and what does the data look like? But the value of the school grade is long past its usefulness, because now it does more damage than anything. You're better off just to deal with the reality of the data that you have.
So in your workshop, will that be addressed?
Yes, it will.
What does all of this mean
in
terms of all the hard work of our teachers and students?
Yes, we will be looking at that.
Well, even though we haven't had school grades, I mean, even when Mr. Kane was in school, schools had reputations, and you did ask about the school district you were in, because there were no charter schools, there were no magnet schools, and you ask about a school district, what is the school district like when you came to this county? I mean, sure, I was in Richmond because we moved back next door to it.
Well, I would like to propose that in addition to academic achievement, we use school climate as one of the district or board goals. And you know, I talked in the past about Katie Haycock saying that if you can't do anything else, change the climate of your school, and you will increase student achievement.
So you're kind of putting them together?
No, I'm talking about having an
exception.
Yeah, improving score. I don't know if we want to put improve or focus or some other adjective, but just
right.
as a general concept, to use school climate in the way that it can help improve
Absolutely.
Student achievement.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have to define all those ways now,
yeah.
but if we can just go with that as one of our second areas of
We know that is one of those areas.
Okay.
So our second week, first is our student achievement and then yeah. school hunt.
Yes. And they go hand in hand. Right. It's things that, yeah. that go hand in hand.
I think we had enough conversation to see why that would be important.
Well, since we don't have any new ones, I really feel customer service is huge.
Well, that's part of school climate. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, okay.
It is.
All right.
But you know, I yeah, you have to make that part of it.
Okay. I was yeah. going to say, if yeah. it's made mm-hmm. part of it, that's
yes.
it
is
part of
it. What about the employee piece? Do we want to make that one of our... The big picture employee part piece, not right. any specific.
Well, I had looked at one of these and it talked about human resources development and management, and that development piece includes, if you're talking about development, it could be development of leadership. It
critical.
Could be professional development, and then you could focus on teachers, mm-hmm. administrators, and support staff, and that pretty much covers everyone, and then under those, you do what is relevant to each one, because I think that piece of the
management what piece on this, I think, will make a big difference.
Human resources development
and
management, because it's ongoing. But what
that addresses,
yeah, like the succession,
like
having
that's
a succession
right.
plan
that's
would
that
also
and
come under
capital
there.
And
yeah,
all
right.
the things that are
right.
under that umbrella.
Yeah.
So I thought that wording, human resources development and management, and then we can fine tune. You know, under EAT, under that.
I'm happy.
What is it called? Human resources.
Human,
what?
Human resources.
Okay.
And we could even look at how they mm-hmm. did it at St. John's to get an idea of how mm-hmm. that.
And with 49% of your leaders being new, you know that we have to develop those leaders as well as that succession. And
absolutely.
We're talking about teacher, you know, we're not just talking about school leaders, but we're also talking about teacher leaders
absolutely.
And what you're talking, you know, the development of all employees.
Well, we have to be able to express that in the form of a goal. So I don't mm-hmm. know that title works in the form of a goal, but...
And the goal has to be centered towards student success
that's
and student
right.
achievement.
That's
you
right.
got to
yeah.
marry those two somehow.
Yeah.
But if you're,
yeah, we can certainly do
right.
that.
If your teachers, administrators, and support staff aren't on board, your students are not going to learn.
Oh, yeah,
so
that's not an argument.
Yeah.
We're not arguing that point. I think it's just
no,
that
just how yeah
the statement as in stating it as a goal
mm-hmm.
that. That title will go away.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's just
yeah.
a concept.
Well, I think all of these will need yeah. a different statement. Because
yeah.
all I have down is student achievement, school climate,
and
human resources.
Capital.
Yeah, and that's all I have here is the human capital.
Yeah. Do we want to stick with those three, or do we want to go out further?
I would like to see a continuation of the community engagement. I just think that has been crucial to success.
All right. Broader or...
I'm comfortable with that.
Okay.
I mean, if anybody wants to add to, there's no pride of authorship there.
Yeah, and I just would want that if we're talking about community engagement, I think what we're doing is we're really focusing on that whole customer service piece. And it's mm-hmm. not just for the community, it's for it to be welcoming to parents and for finding ways to encourage family involvement with the definition of involvement, not just being volunteering in the school. But it's really about parents being engaged in their children's education and what we can do better, what areas we can work on to foment that. Because I talk to many parents in the community that look at me and say, you know, you want us to be involved, but you don't want to hear what we have to say. And I think it would be wonderful to move towards changing that perception. Because we can't mandate families like they do in the charter schools and in the magnet schools to be involved physically as volunteers, but we can find ways of engaging parents, thinking outside the box. You know, there are a lot of things that we can do. I've been talking to people lately, and it's been interesting that in different groups, they've kind of been saying, you know, how do we reach parents? And one thing that I've always suggested is when you have a captive audience at a soccer game, at a football game, if you have a little sound bite for those parents that you don't see at teacher conferences, but if their kid is on the cross-country team, they are there with the aunt, the uncle, and all the siblings. Little snippets of any important information, that could be a venue. You have a captive audience. It doesn't mean they're going to do anything,
right,
but it's that continual reminder of ways that you can, you know, engage.
Even when I did it when I was an elementary principal, was during music concerts. I mean, if there's something that their child is involved in, the parents are there. So that's an opportune time to get out those pieces of information that you have. It's kind of those events where people come out, especially parents.
I mean, it is a part of school climate, but I think it's more a part of that separate communications piece of getting the message out to the community.
Do we want to change community engagement
to something? Well, they are part of the community. I'm fine with that as members, so they are part of the stakeholders.
I was just looking on here. I didn't
The way we have it set up.
Communication and community engagement.
Communication and community engagement, and I really think the word engagement is the right word.
Well, those are dimensions, though. We're talking about our goals.
They can be in those areas. I mean, we took this one out of dimensions, too, and said it was fine. So I think we're just looking for the right words. It doesn't matter where it's coming from.
One of the words in St. John's is customer focus.
I thought we said customer service was going to be
the
school
climate. Or how about stakeholder focus? So for the community engagement and communications. We're looking for a word that encompasses our community engagement, our communications with parents, our getting our message out, you know, just getting making sure the public knows about the good things as well as the bad. And
what did you say, Karen? I'm sorry.
Stakeholder focus.
Did you notice that for St. John's, there's under customer focus satisfaction?
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting.
I think that's the accountability piece, because I know sometimes when we do things, we say, we did that, it's done. But it doesn't mean that we did it well. And I think when you add that accountability piece, you don't just say, I put it out there, but you follow up and make sure that it actually did what it was intended to do.
You know,
when possible. You can't always do that, obviously.
Well, we have an example.
But that doesn't mean we can't have an ethics board.
And our eight characteristics. Those are the accountability. In the accountability piece, we talk about creating a community-wide shared vision, holding the system accountable, communicating the needs and progress of the students to the community, and building public will to improve student achievement. So we could actually fold that into our accountability. We could have the accountability goal and have that communications piece be part of the accountability goal, that we're accountable to the public with the information.
So have the goal actually be
accountability. And put the communication
to all stakeholders. Accountability to all stakeholders. But I don't think that also could encompass the...
I think you lose the family-friendly side of it, because I think accountability, the word, has been so abused and misused that when you talk about accountability, you're thinking a lot of this stuff that's going on. So I personally would like to see something that talks about, here it says, this is just one of their descriptors, engages family and community by promoting shared responsibility for student learning and support of the education system. I think that keeping that community and communication language, is this has to be read by anyone in a way that they can relate to it. And accountability, to me, has just become this crazy negativity.
You know, the one you're reading, like up above it, it says, collaborate with families and community members.
Yeah.
Responding to diverse community interests and needs, mobilizing community resources. I mean, that's pretty broad, but it also gets to the family, the community, diversity,
partnerships.
You know, mobilizing community resources. I think that's pretty broad and takes in a lot of what.
So how are we stating it as a goal in that context?
Something like promoting family and community engagement. What is the language that we want to use for goals? What's the?
We haven't used that language so far in anything we've just
heard. Do you want to say to promote, or do you want to say collaborate with families and communities?
And promote collaboration.
Promote collaboration.
Yeah. Well, collaborate certainly covers the part about asking their opinion and really listening to their feedback. Okay. Collaborate with community and family. Okay, so there's four. That's four.
Okay, could we go over again what they are?
We have, well, they're not
I know they're not
fleshed out.
That's okay.
Academic achievement, school climate, the human capital, and collaboration with the community and families.
Human capital,
that whole thing.
HR development and management.
Development and management.
I think we could put the accountability piece under the academic if you want to look at it in only that narrow, context is of the academic achievement.
But don't you think that there's accountability under all of them?
Yeah, there is.
Oh, yes. You're holding me accountable to, one is that you want me to establish some goals underneath these, right? Mm-hmm. Some things that I'm going to be doing.
Right.
And so that's the accountable part of it.
So do you see us just using the general concepts as we meet with the superintendent on the next, at the next meeting? Or do we want to come prepared with any specifics about what goes with them? Or just wait and see what they have?
I think we should come prepared, because I think if we really take the time to sit with this and reflect what that means to us, I'm sure we'll all come up with different ways of getting there. And then obviously the superintendent will have her information. And I just think it'd be interesting to just see how that evolves. Because when we come here, it's really hard to dig deep and have the conversation. But if we come prepared with some of our ideas, then that saves time, and we can decide how much of that we want to share or not. But to just come cold, I feel, is kind of wasting some of our time.
That's what I would ask, is that you have said areas that you want me to... Mm-hmm. You might want to put in a little different terms, but I would ask that you be specific enough about what you want me to do in terms of, academic achievement. You could let me decide how to get there.
Absolutely. Well, when I was saying leave them in general terms or be specific, I meant, do we want to sit here right now and work it? I didn't mean about our coming prepared as an individual. I meant, do we as a board want to have these expanded, or do we want to just leave them as general concepts for now? I mean, they're still going to be reworked one more time, so it might just...
I mean, the problem is if you try to flesh it out now, you're going to start to paint yourself into a corner a little bit. Until you have more information.
Well, I mean, what I'm thinking is we identified four areas, and we have a lot of information that we can use to go back and say school climate under the Iowa model, what kind of things that they look at in terms of school climate in the other school district, what kind of things that they look at, and then knowing our district, have an idea of what some of those things are. It's not telling the superintendent this is what you must do, but it's saying, you know, if we're talking under family engagement, facilitates connections of students and families to the health and social services that support a focus on learning. So I'll be looking at what the superintendent is doing, and if I think that's important, we can say, you know, is that something we expect to be part of that or not? We're not saying this is a list of all you must do, but in order to have that conversation, we need to look at this information. And right now, you know, we don't all have this document. We don't have any other documents that we might want to use. And to avoid having to reinvent the wheel, it's nice to have guidance from documents that work in other schools.
So what I'm hearing is on the 27th, we can work with what you bring back and decide on the district goals and the artifacts that we will look at for those goals. And then we would just need one more meeting to actually finish up the evaluation document. Does that sound so realistic to everyone? Mm-hmm.
So we're looking at scheduling two meetings on the 27th, workshops 9 to 11 and 1 to 3. One would be testing and the other would be the district goals. Is that right? Is that what I'm hearing?
What's the...
You actually have a roundtable scheduled at 1.
Yeah, we
on the 27th?
Yes.
I thought the roundtable was on the 13th.
Yeah,
August 13th is the roundtable.
All right. When I looked at my schedule before I came down, there was one on the 27th.
There was some confusion. I know. I heard some conversation about
maybe I had it on the wrong
moving
place.
The roundtable to the 2nd or to the 4th Tuesday.
Why?
But I didn't think we had agreed on that.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I still have it
on the 13th.
Okay. On the 13th.
All right, so that's the roundtable, and then here is
okay,
the...
Okay, my question was, which do you want, 9 to 11 for the testing information and 1
yes,
to 3?
Yes, well, I'd like to go over the academic information
in
the morning.
I thought that would be appropriate.
And then that's a good lead-in to the other.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. As long as that's okay
yeah.
with you.
Right.
So from 9 to 11 on the 27th, we will do the information on our testing, and then from 1 until 3, we will do the district goals.
And if it's okay, I'd like to bring my sex team with me for that to review. At that particular time, can I present the... Because you're asking me now to look strategically at these things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even though you don't have them all written out in terms of the language that you want.
Well, is that the proper order of things? Don't you have some district goals you want to present to us for discussion?
Yes.
And then strategically... So I'm not thinking 1 to 3 is the strategic... Is that correct?
No, for the superintendent.
Okay, all right.
As I look at these, didn't you say then the superintendent?
Yes, and suggest artifacts or ways that would demonstrate
right.
those goals, and then we can meet the following week and do the actual evaluation instrument,
and that would
and
be
put
that.
The superintendent goals in there, and we'll already have had an idea of what artifacts would
okay.
support.
So
them.
You're looking at the 3rd
yeah.
of September,
uh-huh.
of doing a meeting on the 3rd
uh-huh.
on superintendent goals.
Yes.
Okay. Morning, afternoon.
After.
So 1 to 3, superintendent goals.
Okay.
And then... Mr. McCain, you need to make certain that you make note that on Monday the 9th is our school board meeting and the final budget hearing on Monday night the 9th, because both Ms. Disney and Ms. Jimenez will be leaving. You're gone the next day, is that right?
Yes.
Heading out to Pensacola.
Yes, on Tuesday.
And you both are gone. And it's highly unlikely that we will have the governor appoint someone between now and that time. We need you physically here.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry. We need you physically and mentally here. If you would. Just a heads up.
Ms. Judy will send
okay.
me an email.
Okay.
Should we schedule the one on the 3rd for 3 hours in case we need it? We can always look to adjourn early, but we can.
I think that would be a good idea.
Yeah.
So 1 to 4. On Tuesday the 3rd, from 1 to 4, the superintendent's goals.
August 27th, 9 to 11, and 1 to 3.
Yes.
9 to 11 and 1 to 3 should be, I think, fine.
Great.
Yes.
Okay. And is on, did you just say the 23rd?
27.
No, I said the 29th. Okay. because we do have, and I hope we're going to continue to do these executive sessions, we need to keep on top of those.
And
yes, please. So we have 9 to 11 will be our testing workshop, 1 to 3 will be district goals, 4 to 5 will be executive session, and our school board meeting at 6 o'clock.
Okay, and it won't be a testing workshop, it'll be a district data chat.
Data chat. I like that. Data chat.
I can't pronounce those things. I did have a question since we were talking about goals, and since we do have a few minutes on the document that we got for the Florida State Board of Education strategic plan. If you look at page 11, it has the performance indicators for pre-K through 12 students, and it has the current, when this was written, 2011-2012, and it has the 2017-18 long-term goal.
Right.
And I just, we've never really had this conversation as a board, but I know that there was a lot of publicity around these goals at the national level. It's on page 11. Because of the way...
Yeah, there's no... The page numbers didn't come through on this copy.
I'm sorry.
Let me... Can I see... Does it say kindergarten readiness as the first one?
Oh,
no.
What's up top? Like number...
It says pre-K... Oh, number one, pre-K 12 students.
Okay, got it. Improved kindergarten readiness. Okay. That's number one underneath that.
Right. Okay. So we've got the improved kindergarten readiness and the two priorities there. And then on the next page... It goes to pre-K through 12 students. And there was a lot of discussion at the national level about these goals because, if, for example, if you look at the goal for 2011-2012 for Black African Americans, it was 38%. And the goal going into 2017-18, it's 74%. And it doesn't really address our moonshot moment goal, which is 90% of students reading at grade level. And so we've never talked about it, and I've been curious, when the district is looking at performance indicators for students, do they follow this mindset, or are we setting goals for all kids? Because that's been, you know, for somebody to say that we want all students to succeed, but we expect Hispanic kids to only reach 53% and economically disadvantaged to 46%, we're not saying that we believe all students can succeed. We're saying we believe that based on your subgroup, we expect a certain level of achievement. And I just, we never had this conversation, but this is a state document that, you know, we look to.
At one time, under No Child Left Behind, we had AYP, Adequate Yearly Progress, and that's really when we began to look at subgroups and call attention to the fact that yearly we could track our progress with achievement gaps and different groups. Now that has changed to what they call AMOs, annual measurable objective, and that as well looks at subgroups. And the way they determine that, there's a formula, and I can't tell you the formula, but the way they determine that is based on where you are right now with your gap and take it up incrementally over time.
That's
Do you remember in AYP where, you know, by 2013, 14, 100% of your students were going to be okay? Well, this has looked at it differently. So these numbers that we are looking at here would be for the state. So they would be looking at where the state was, and they have this formula that they use that shows incremental progress over time rather than to everybody being at 100% at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So they're called AMOs, and we have our own targets. Our target looks different than the state because it's based on where you were, okay,
mm-hmm.
and that formula is incrementally takes to where you should be at 2017-18.
So are we going to see it at the workshop that
yes,
you present?
We will.
Are we going
yes,
to see what that looks like for
yes.
our students in our schools?
Yes, the Bureau of School Improvement and Office of Differentiated Accountability has just done a workshop for secondary principals yesterday, elementary today, and that was one of the pieces that we were looking at on the AMOs. What was the target, and did we meet the target? What is it for next year? So, yes, we will be sharing that.
And we'll see your target, because you're saying this, they have a target, but we have a school district target. So
there's a school district target, and there's a school target. You know what I mean? It looks different based on where you were at this point, at that point in time, and incrementally where you need to be going. So the school has a target as well, and it goes up every year. But that's why they changed it, is they took everybody up to the same AYP, said everybody should be there this year at 100%, you know. And it was rather controversial, because when you explain it the way you did, well, you don't really expect those students to be making gains. That's not the case. What they're saying is, let's be a little bit more realistic on what the target should be as we move those students along.
But that's, you know, I brought it up because that is what it looks like.
Yeah.
And I think when people get on these websites, and right. because everything is so transparent and available, you look at it and you make that inference. Yeah. And I think that's why it's important, again, to tell your story, to explain what this means, so that there's not misunderstanding.
When everybody had the same target, what you would hear from, you know, from the community is, but they're not all starting in the same place, so how can they all end up at the same time at 100%? You know, so there's going to be a flip side to everything that's out there, and we could do a better job of explaining it to them.
And even when you explain it, it's hard to understand. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So some people, you know, are very detail oriented, so they want to know the formula.
Yeah.
I don't even know it. So.
Hey, anything else?
My brain is tired.
Dr. Adams, do you have any closing?
No, I appreciate that we're focusing in on some things. I am in agreement with you, board. You haven't said anything to me that I don't agree that those are the areas that we should be looking at. So I think you've got some good information in your packet in terms of benchmarks that you could be looking at, or artifacts that and evidence that you think can be presented, and I think that's what it's about.
Well, I think our effort will be to be fair to you and to our school community as a whole with these objectives, because ultimately your success with those objectives comes from the success of every single classroom. So, you know, that is an accountability word you don't want to use too much.
You smile.
But I do think that's part of it. Thank you. I think we have our day set. Anything else?
Yes. This page, this is Everett Public School on it. I wanted to explain that to y'all. Remember last week we talked about the board doing assessments of itself, and then, you know, figuring out what it was that we needed to do and to learn, and then creating a plan of work. Well, this is a document that would come out of that assessment piece. Is that once you do those assessments, you sit down and you write standards for the board. And there's standards 1 through 5 that gives an example of what the expectations the board has for itself. And then the work plan priorities explain what we're going to do for that standard. And then I provided the example that Dr. Adams had done. I had, last week, you may remember, a page with the color with blue and yellow on it. And that was a more complex schedule. But this is just something Dr. Adams had provided for us at the workshop where we talked about EPIC. And this is just, you know, in essence, we're kind of making a work plan. We just didn't know why. But that would be a way for us to make sure that all of our needs are met, And, you know, we talk a lot about, well, if three people don't want to hear our workshop, we don't get the workshop. But this would walk us through that process and maybe get that third agreement for why we would want another workshop, because we can see where the deficits are in our own professional development and know that why we need to have a workshop on something, because we have a vote coming up and we may not be prepared with all the background information for ourselves.
Well, and I think not to talk about this qualifier, and I was going to mention it briefly, and I will be brief this girl is out of time, but you know, not to think that the impact of an appointed school board member is not going to impact us in some way is, I'm sure, I know I remember when I first came back on the board, I know that everyone at this table understands that unless a retired school board member happens to turn up to be living in Mr. Pegler's district, there's going to be a learning curve there. I don't care if they've been at every single school board meeting, watched the meetings, have read every single line of our policies. There is a learning curve there, and we are going to have to be very much together, and we're going to have to be very respectful of that fifth party that is going to have one-fifth of the decision-making opportunities for this board, whether it is temporary or it is permanent, if there's somebody who's going to run for election and is elected then. But I don't know about my fellow board members, but I've been contacted by a couple of people who turned their hat in the ring, and on behalf of others, and I have made it very clear that whoever the governor appoints will be, I'm certain, embraced by this board, and we will make it a successful experience for whoever it is. So, but I think it is a one-year appointment, and I think that we can do our collective best, and Dr. Adams can also assist with staff to get that person up to where that they're comfortable at being in decision-making. But traditionally, when a board changes and you add additional people, we traditionally end up with a lot of workshops and other things that we wouldn't have on a regular basis to try and get that person up to speed and to refresh ourselves. I don't see that being a possibility next year with an appointed person. So unless there's something that, you know, for a critical issue, then I can see us adding additional workshops. But I think moving forward, what everything we have on our plate, all the challenges we have academically, that, you know, there's only so much room for us to have that amount of time. So that's my two cents worth. Okay. Yes.
You know, since we have a few minutes, and you know, something that we might want to do that could be valuable. I know when I came on the board, I got a binder with some basic information, and since then, there are some documents that person should have, and I think it might be worth our while to maybe at a round table or something brainstorm. You know, if someone is coming in mid-game, what kind of documents should they have? And just have like a resource binder. Here's the capital plan. Here's the budget. Here's the code of conduct. Here's the pupil progression plan. Here's this. You know, what are documents that could be a resource for them that they might have to refer to as they move forward? Having it in advance rather than later trying to figure out, does this exist? And that's something that we could all brainstorm. I don't think it would take us a lot of time. And then we could, or if it's all on that website section, then that's fine too, but that could be a nice welcome to just have a little package.
The Stang always has a packet with information that you have, right? Things you have to fill out, and getting your keys and getting online and access and those things. But what you're talking about is for someone to be sitting in a decision making
right. When Jeff came on, I actually had found a list, and I made a copy of it for him, and I said, Jeff, you know, these are documents that you need to get a hold of that will help you do your job better, you know, since you have to hit the ground running, you know. So I guess
exactly. We've also had them go around and talk to the assistant superintendents, you know, to kind of fill them in on, put a face and a name and some of the priorities for that year.
I think part of the problem, though, is I know I remember spending a lot of hours with you and Matt and Jeff, but when you don't know what you don't know, it's hard to figure out what you need to pay attention to and what you can just get later. you know, it's really hard to figure out. It's so much information.
As long as that person is coming with common sense and an open mind, we will be fine. And I have said that twice. You know, that's what we need. We need common sense and an open mind. And people who are, you know, with their own agenda, who are willing to be receptive to a discussion on issues. And that's the hardest thing, I think, for anybody who comes on a board, is you come in gung-ho and ready. And Jeff voiced that. You know, you have so many things that are really, really, really important, and you really want to get those on some workshop or some board agenda for action. And he said it's very humbling when you realize that's you need a whole lot more information than you have coming in before you can be an advocate for some of those things. Not that anybody's stonewalling. He wasn't saying that.
No,
he said, I just didn't, you know, there's some things I came in with and I didn't have enough information. I really didn't.
But, you know, Carol and I got... We got an hour with Russ Peterson on sunshine, and we got that white book with the Florida statue.
And that was it.
That was it. That was all we had.
Yeah, there's a lot of interest out there in this. There's eight people.
Eight? But they're not all in the district.
However, I think, Misty Gresta, correct me if I'm wrong, he has made some appointments that were out of the district for people to fill seats. Is that correct?
Yes, there is anecdotal evidence. I'll put it that
love
way.
I'm not a lawyer either. Thank you very much. So I wasn't asking for a statement.
This is the governor's call. We talked about that last time, right?
He can do whatever he wants to do. Because our governor says it will be appointed, vacancy will be filled by the governor.
Newt Gingrich.
You know,
how about another McCain?
Who's Uncle John? Get Uncle John here.
Uncle John would be great here.
And Al Gore, and then we can learn all about the internet.
Anyway, anything else to come before the group? Meeting adjourned.
Before we go off on too many tangents.